This series is brought to you by the Restaurant Workers Community Foundation, an advocacy and action nonprofit created by and for restaurant workers. Hi, I'm Kiki Luya, and this is Shift Work by Restaurant Workers Community Foundation, a podcast bringing you stories from the heart of the restaurant industry. Each week, I'll introduce you to leaders who are working to transform hospitality. You'll also hear from folks who are in the restaurant trenches to hear firsthand some of the challenges they face. This week, I'm talking to Mavis J. Sanders, Director of Culinary Development and Education at Drive Change. But first, meet Reagan Draper, a restaurant worker from Chicago, founder of the Chicago Hospitality Accountable Actions Database, and a member of RWCF's Racial Justice Fund Steering Committee.
A coworker of mine who identifies as a Black femme hospitality worker experienced a racist interaction with a guest that was very, any racist interaction with a guest is traumatizing. But this happened within a workspace that she was relatively new in. She had been working there just for a few months and she didn't really know what the policies were. So she just kind of diffused the situation, handled it to the best of her abilities, and told everyone else like not to go to that table until they were done with their experience, just to kind of diffuse the situation and get that guest finished with their dining experience as quickly as possible. The next day during a pre-shift meeting, she asked management if we could kick a guest out. My coworker, and instead of answering her question, my coworker ended up having to navigate the emotional reaction of her white employers instead of receiving an answer to her question. And I bring up that story. I think we all need to accept the reality that we live in a very racialized country, unfortunately. And the hospitality industry is just as racialized as our country is. I mean, it comes from a history of slavery. We all need to accept that. No matter how equitable or fair your restaurant is, sexual harassment and racial discrimination is going to happen. You can't really control who walks in your door. And so the only way to really combat that is to have clear policies beforehand, so that you're not left reacting to a situation. Instead, you're preparing for that situation and letting your vulnerable staff, your marginalized staff know that when those situations come, this is how you plan on supporting them.
Mavis J. Sanders is a chef and activist who worked at Blue Hill at Stone Barns and Untitled at the Whitney before re-examining her role in the culinary world. She has served as operations director of the Brownsville Community Culinary Center in New York City and is now leading education at Drive Change, a nonprofit that welcomes formerly incarcerated youth get quality jobs in the restaurant industry. Mavis J., welcome to Shift Work.
Thanks for having me.
You received a culinary degree from the Culinary Institute of America. You worked in fine dining, but you made the leap to nonprofit work and nonprofit work that addresses inequities in the restaurant industry. Why did you make that change?
It was a personal decision. I grew up in food and like in love with fine dining and the razzle dazzle and pomp and circumstance. Give me an excuse to celebrate anything and I will. When it comes to being in those spaces though, they tend to be very exclusionary. And it just started to weigh on me about like who I was feeding. The fact that like only my parents who you know, are well-educated and professional people, the only people in my family who could ever afford to eat at the restaurants that I was working at. It just started to seep into my brain. And I was like, why can't I take these ingredients and feed them to my cousins who can't afford to eat, you know? And so it just became like a mission in my head, like, how do I feed the rest of my family? And that's like where the work started for me. And
that's how I approach feeding everybody at this point. It's just like, that's my family and how do I get them fed? And so if you ever see me like out in the streets, it is so personal what I'm doing. Like I'm in it 100%.
Yeah. And, you know, as I'll just kind of, you know, speak for myself here. And, you know, you have also been a woman of color in the kitchen in fine dining kitchens and, you know, in a bunch of different establishments. And, you know, for me, I often was the only person of color, woman of color, especially in kitchens. What was your experience?
It's funny. I was actually having this conversation with somebody else last night who has that similar thing going on. And then we had queer bodies on top of that. And it's always, I think there is a level of like knowing, like when you're like, if you have that experience, like, you know, that there's always a level of BS that you're sifting through, like constantly, that whether you realize it, like you wake up to it, it's not, at this point, it's not even anything that you think about. So it would have to be something like extraordinary to like throw me off my game. It's also the thing of like, you, it's like constantly having to navigate, whether or not, if people don't think you're, don't believe you, they don't know your story, then it's not real. And so having to navigate those places and find safe places, people that you can talk to, people who do have similar experiences, mentors, either be it like directly somebody who has been through the similar situation, or somebody in another industry adjacent that has been through the similar situation. I think I'm very grateful, especially in those spaces. I know there's a lot of Black bodies that have come before me and who have also been an only in those spaces. And I don't know what they did in that space, but I know that they have passed the, like, they've cleared the path for me to be there. And so I always try to like remember that and then also do the same to like fight for a little bit of like a little bit more space to bring more people into that space. So, and like with the advice of like, be careful. yeah.
Right, right. I think that's, you know, something so important that I want to like shout out a little bit more is like mentorship is so important, right? Just like finding someone who looks like you, who has a similar experience to you, who's, you know, been in the industry doing what you want to do, who inspires you. That can mean so much. And, you know, it's also, it just kind of like begs the question, like, why aren't there more Black, brown, and queer bodies in positions of leadership in the restaurant industry, right? But mentorship is huge. I mean, I think speaking of mentorship, you know, so Drive Change as an organization, right, is like a multifaceted program. It supports incarcerated youth and gives them restaurant like on-the-job training. Do you know if you can, you know, maybe speak to what the genesis of this program was and why that population?
So originally it was the founder was a teacher on Rikers. And that's where it started. Like they were just there and they were realizing that there was there. I think it was a white person. And so I think it was just like a person who had a lot of privilege in their life. And I think it was like really starting to hit home, like on a very like real basis, because they were in it and could see it happening, the inequities and food being an industry that has like a low barrier to entry in, you know, when it comes to like getting a job. I think that they put the two together and wanted to offer, you know, training, food training, like on a food truck, and have that be a way for those young people to have some kind of like self-determination coming out of incarceration.
Sure. So could you tell me about your work with the program fellows? What has been your experience?
It's actually, it's super amazing. It's challenging, I'll tell you that. I think anytime you get to work with young people, it's inspiring. Like they just have like a different perspective. I think particularly people coming reentered society or coming out of incarceration face a whole host of different challenges than anybody else of any other kind of experience. And so there's a level of patience and listening and understanding that I've gained over time, especially like coming out of restaurants. Like in restaurant industries, when you're working a line, it's like, yes and now. that's it. And so like getting rid of that, like, cause that like seeps into your body, like into your bloodstream, into your bones. Right. So like being able to even get rid of that is liberating, and to like sit and listen and like work through. I think the biggest thing for me in like comparison to program, different kinds of programs that happen out there and like why they work and why they don't work, I think the biggest thing in the last couple of years that I've had the privilege of working with one of our young people, his name is Dupree, and he had been out in the industry, had gone through the program, been out in the industry, and now he works with me directly. Every day. And he was such a strong worker. And he had held a job consistently. And he was a strong worker. And he was just like, I don't understand why I'm in this restaurant. And I've been here and I've trained people and I don't ever get to move. I just stay here. And he was getting really frustrated. And he felt like people were like talking down to him or always othering him or seeing him as like a charity hire. And like they had done their job by hiring him. And when we started to work together, we started working on getting him more exposure. And he like started to be able to develop like more of a curiosity. But then also like this whole, like this, like when we were talking about mentorship, the ability to be able to like make mistakes and not have it be a threat on like your ability to make a living, right? Because I feel like there's a lot of young people or people in the world who have the opportunity to like make 1,000 mistakes, but whenever you have like a stigma attached to you, it's like you feel like there's a lot riding on everything. Every single moment is critical. Like every single thing could like lead to another moment of crisis, and you're always trying to avoid that instead of just being able to be and live and learn through making mistakes, and learning like how to be a leader and how to like really think about the bigger picture. And I think the biggest thing that we're doing right now when it comes to our fellows is just like that critical thinking, that problem solving, like teaching that, right? Like the hard skills, most anybody can learn to cut an onion. Right. But when it comes to like why we're using these onions or why things are cheaper during this and like how I need to ordering from different places, like pricing things, responsibility, like who, like the responsibility of the food and who you're serving it to. Like you don't get that in most restaurant jobs. And if you have that knowledge, you can go into a restaurant job and automatically be like, I shouldn't be peeling potatoes, I should be leading your line.
Yep. I should have specials on the menu, right? Yeah.
Right. So, and I'm not even trying to jump to them, you know, having specials on the menu like day of, but like, I need you to see that this person has the ability, they're thinkers. They're not workers, right? They're thinkers, they're dreamers, they're innovators. They're like young people who have so much creativity. Right? Like they have so much creativity. They're so inspiring. They're so, like so artistic. There's always like new tech and tools that they like have easy access to and they're always like developing with, and they're so creative, you know, just giving them that time to like grow. Best part of my job.
I love that. You know, it brings me back to when I was, I won't name the restaurant, but I was working at a restaurant in Chicago, and we'll just keep this one a secret. But I remember, you know, it's a lot of times, and there's a lot of conversation lately about, you know, is what does it mean to be a chef, right? And I think chefs often, it's like people associate the food, and especially if you have a good experience, right? It all goes back to the chef. But what ends up happening is that the people who support that work, right? Who are the ones who are peeling potatoes, who are the ones who are doing the dishes, who are the ones who are making the restaurant work, get kind of like pushed into the shadows. Bringing it back to drive change, I think one of the things that I so much respect about what it is that you do over there is it's more than just about like supporting youth, right? It's like, it's about creating systemic change and like looking at the industry and being like, you have to be better in order to do this work, right? And so how is drive change and how are you working with restaurants and owners to like reimagine hospitality? And I think even if we can dig deeper, like what does it mean to be an equitable, supportive workplace?
Thank you for asking. So we actually do have a program that we've developed and have been developing for years called Hospitality for Social Justice. And it is just that. It is a space to like start the work. I'm just going to say start. and it is like a pay for play kind of situation where if it's meant for power holders in the hospitality industry, in the food sector, to come and pay for the service to be in this class with us. It's a series of like six classes. And they're like 3 hours each. And it's about having a space to like really educate yourself with us and then start to like work through how like white supremacist structures show up in your job, in the structures that you've put in place, that you've been taught. Cause a lot of people don't even like have the education to know, like you can tell them broad brand things, but they disassociate that from what they're doing on a day to day. Right. And so to actually like have the space for even some of our team members to be vulnerable to be like, hey, I was in the industry and I was a leader and I thought I was doing great. And this is how I was a shitty leader. And this is how like I was, you know, being oppressive. This is how like I was allowing these systems to form and like perpetrating these things and perpetrating harm to other people, my young people and the staff that I said I cared about. And that moment right there really kind of opens the room for everyone, I feel like. And like, let's be real about it. Let's talk about specifics. And it's a cool, you know what I mean? Like we all honor, you know what I mean? That this is a safe space and that it's a private space and like nobody's going to go out and say anything about what was said in this room. But I know that it, I know that it works because people sometimes, you know, they quit their jobs after. They're like, I can't affect change the way I want to in this place and I'm going to leave. And there's other people who are in positions of power and they're like working for, you know, larger companies and they stay in there as a means to like infiltrate and like create safe spaces for young people, especially young people of color or anybody who's like coming from a background that is, you know, statistically like oppressed.
Absolutely. You know, that's a really great way to like open up dialogue and make people feel, you know, safe about it is like realizing that like we all hold white supremacy within ourselves, right? And so we have to like deconstruct our own beliefs in order to like deconstruct the system, right? But like the recognition that like everyone has like, you know, upheld these beliefs to varying degrees. I think like for me, honestly, like that was one of the, even like as a Black woman, when I realized that about myself, like, oh, like I allow this behavior, right? Like I'm still existing within like white supremacist systems and as if it's just like commonplace because it's like the only thing that I know. And like once we all kind of get to a place where we're like, you know what? No, I'm tired of this. I can't operate like this anymore. I think is like when we can actually start to have real conversations about change and not just like, well, throw up some black squares on our Instagram and like pretend, you know, we're woke for the day. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. So, you know, I saw a lot of things last year and now I'm kind of wondering like, well, where are you? What are we doing now? You know, like how is the industry going to change? Actually, and I'd love to ask you that. Like, you know, what has changed? Like, you know, since 2020, right? Since everyone was kind of saying, oh, you know, like after all the George Floyd stuff and people were really starting to have conversation, it seemed, around like how the industry needs to be more conscious of like their own racial biases. Has anything changed?
I think that a lot of people have expanded the vocabulary and have really learned what and how to participate in performative justice. And they put on a really great show. And good for their egos, you know. And some people even are like, I took a 2-hour course on, or I watched like a 2-hour webinar, and now, you know, I'm super woke and I understand these things. But still, if you're not doing the work to actually say, like, how am I, how am I still upholding these systems, then it doesn't actually work. You know what I mean? Like, somebody can sit here and teach you, like, you know, how to, I can show you a class on how to make pizza for sure. But if you never put your hands together, like, into flour, then you're not going to know how to make the dough. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, like, what you saw that doesn't make you educated on it. And I feel like, actually, I'm not going to lie to you. I feel a little disappointed in some sectors of our industry, because there, when you're a leader in the industry, like, you should really, you have the opportunity to be out front, and like make real change. And there haven't been enough, like highly recognized leaders that have stepped up and done something different. People have been like, oh, I'm going to now pay somebody $25 an hour. Yeah. But if you're like, none of your practices has changed, like, what is, then nobody, like, that's not helping anybody, right? Like, yes, there are pieces of ourselves that we have all, like, compromised and sold off, like, for the right price in hopes to get somewhere else. But, like, $25 an hour ain't gonna be it. Like, especially, no, that's not gonna make anybody move. You know what I mean? Like, I'm gonna be uncomfortable here, I'm gonna be uncomfortable there. I'd rather be uncomfortable at my house. It's disappointing. It's disappointing. I'm disappointed. You know what I mean? And politicians that are, like, standing up on platforms in front of the world talking about low-skill workers and how, I'm disappointed about all of it. And I feel like our industry is still in the middle of a reckoning, and that's why restaurants are still closing left and right, because restaurants are supposed to be food centers. They're supposed to be pillars of community. And when you take that and you sell that community in order for it to be all about profit, then you're going to fail eventually. You know what I mean? Like, that's just going to be that. I've, in this COVID junk, like, especially with this Omicron situation, like, I've heard people tell me, like, come back and tell me, like, oh, like, at work, they didn't want to close down, like, over the holidays. And so they just told us not to go get tested.
Wow.
And
really?
It was like, what?
Right. Because if they don't, like, know. Yeah.
Then, that's yeah, story. Right. It's just like, yo, is this what we're doing? Like, you, like, and I can't tell those people anything, but I have to, like, you should leave. You should report them and you should leave. You know what I mean? Like, I'm talking about just, like, wage workers, like, not people who have, like, you know, power to, like, determine, like, whether or not to shut down a restaurant, you know what I mean? But people, if you were a server and you're hearing that, like, there is nothing safe about that space. You gotta go.
No, not at all. Yeah. Well, because obviously they care more about profit than people. And they've essentially shown you that you are as good as the production that you can do for them. They're not considering you as an individual, your own safety, the safety of others, the safety of their diners, for that matter.
It's about their individual ego, like, longevity. Like, it's all selfish, right? It's so selfish. It's not about the diners. I don't even know that. You know what I mean? Like, it's necessarily, like, about, like, I don't know, like, the people that they are around are, like, I can't even imagine you thinking about somebody else and saying that. Like, you are only about you, and you are willing to sacrifice anyone else or anything else in order to make sure that you and your establishment can continue, because you see people as replaceable.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. You know, speaking of the diners, and maybe just speaking to the diners, what can they do? Like, how can they check their own behaviors? What can they do to support better restaurants?
Yeah, I think you have to be willing to ask more questions. Just because people use a lot of buzzwords doesn't mean that they're actually practicing those things. You know, like, ask the questions, you know, sit down. You know, if you're over there and you're looking at the menu, be it paper or on your phone, and just like you would ask, you know, is this steak, you know, ethically sourced? Ask them about their wages. Ask them about, like, wage transparency in the restaurant. Like, ask the question. You can ask the question. right? Like, we've learned to do that. You've learned to be like, is there gluten in this? Right? Like, hey, is there slavery in the back of this? Like, what's happening? Can we have that conversation? Like, ask.
Yeah. You'll probably get a really real answer too, being curious. I mean, so Mavis, I think we are going to take a short break and then come back with some rapid fire questions, if you're okay with that.
Okay, sure.
Yes. Awesome. We'll be back with more Shift Work after a short break. This series is brought to you by the Restaurant Workers Community Foundation, an advocacy and action nonprofit created by and for restaurant workers. We are a nationwide community dedicated to making the restaurant industry more hospitable for everyone. By addressing quality of life issues that disproportionately affect restaurant workers, 40% of whom live on poverty level wages, we hope to strengthen the workforce and increase opportunity for advancement in the industry to more people. The restaurant industry is notorious for low wages, poor job mobility, high turnover, and burnout. But it doesn't have to be that way. Visit restaurantworkerscf.org to learn more about what we're doing to make change and join us. Welcome back to Shift Work. On this episode, we've been focusing on issues of racial justice in the hospitality industry. We'll get back to my conversation with Mavis J. Sanders shortly. First, John DeBerry, RWCF's co-founder and board president, has some resources to share.
Hi, I'm John DeBerry, co-founder and board president of Restaurant Workers Community Foundation. Did you know that when it comes to rooting out racism in restaurants, it has to start from the top with owners and managers? But there's also room for collaboration and solidarity at all levels of employment, according to Regan Draper, founder of the CHAD Project and an RWCF grantee. Here are some baseline rules for engaging your whole team in the work of anti-racism. First, encourage everyone to speak out against racism and discrimination and create a safe space where people can share experiences openly. Second, ask employees about the biggest barriers to their success and how those can be removed. Third, give employees the option to participate in policy changes, but don't make assumptions about who has the time, energy, or desire to chip in. It's not fair to burden colleagues and employees who might already face oppression in their day-to-day lives with this work. When you do hold staff meetings and training sessions, keep the groups small to encourage conversations and authentic engagement, and make sure conversations are intersectional. They should address issues for members of all marginalized communities across race, gender, ability, and others. Ready to get started? Get resources and training opportunities via Hospitality for Social Justice at drivechangenyc.org, High Road Restaurants at highroadrestaurants.org, and Adding Racial Equity to the Menu, an Equity Toolkit at raceforward.org.
All right, Mavis J., let's do some rapid-fire questions. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Okay. Name one thing every restaurant in America could do to foster equity.
Pay transparency.
Ooh, pay transparency. Nice. What's one resource you'd recommend to owners who want to make their restaurants more supportive?
Come check us out at Hospitality for Social Justice at drivechangenyc.org.
Boom, plug. What nonprofit or chef or even, say, public figure would you like to collaborate with?
Oh, there's so many. The first person who came to mind, honestly, was Karen Washington.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Give me a why. I mean, there's obvious, but yeah, what's your why?
I love her relationship and how she sees food. And I mean, I think being in that space and being creative and telling a story together would be so amazing. Thank you for making me say that out loud, because I'm going to contact her about it. I'm going to do it this year.
Yes, yes. You said it, you put it into existence. It will happen. Tell me one story or even just a thing that gives you hope.
I had a young person come to me and they said that they wanted to, do a video series. And I said, you're going to have to learn how to be a writer. And I said, I don't want to write. And they walked away. And I said, okay, cool. And then the next day they came back to me and was like, you're right, I need to be a writer. And I was like, yes, thank you.
Oh, yes. What made them change their mind?
I think they just had to think about it. Because I was just like, you're going to have to write. Like, you're going to have to be able to, like, you know, like write your own copy. If you're going to have a web series, that means that you need a website, which means that you need to be able to like write like blog posts or anything like that about it. Like you're going to still have to like have like a good writing background. And the next day she kind of slid in and she was just like, yeah, I got to learn how to be a writer. So I was like, yeah, let's work on that.
Yeah. Like push through fear and do the work. I love that. Okay. Last but not least, what are you most excited about for 2022?
So when I left Fine Dining, I was at a place where they were like selling chickens for like $30, like raw chickens for people for like $30. And that's reasonable. yeah. You know, the chickens, they cost money. They do. Like food costs money, you know, but the chicken costs $30, you know? And then I went upstate like last year and I met a farmer, it's a black farmer. And he's like, I'm raising these same chickens and I have to charge, sell them at $2 less than my white counterpart is selling them. And he was just saying how much that was hurting. And then he couldn't get them out. And he was also talking about the issues of like logistics and, you know, getting stuff into the city because he's like way, way upstate. And I bought out all of his chickens and then fed them to the Marcy houses for free. One of the, like when I left Fine Dining, like I said, like what I said I wanted to do was to take the food that we had been making and make it readily available for everyone, especially the people who needed the most, those ingredients, like how they like nurture your body. And I was able to like support a black farmer, right? And it was also us supporting our community, like who were dealing with food insecurity day in and day out.
That's beautiful.
That's what I want to continue to do. That's why, you know, like our fellowship that we're running now, we had been sending people out into the industry and that's still an option, but we're also creating jobs for them here now.
Oh my gosh. Mavis J, that is, that's so beautiful. That actually gives me hope right there, that story. I love that. I love that you made that connection and it seems so seamless. And it sounds like it's so gratifying. That's our rapid fire question segment. I mean, I almost don't want to let you go. I've so enjoyed talking with you today. Thank you so much for joining us on Shift Work today. It has been a pleasure.
Pleasure has been mine, and like, you know, whether, you know, keep this or cut it out, but thank you for all that you do in our industry and like continuing to also, you know, be a partner in justice and equity and be that, you know, everything that happens out front and in front of the world and everything that happens behind the scenes. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Shift Work. To learn more about RWCF's work and donate to the cause, visit www.restaurantworkerscf.org. Thanks for joining us on the podcast and in the work as we bring you stories from the heart of the restaurant industry. Links to the organizations and resources mentioned in this episode can be found in our show notes. I'm your host, Kiki Luya. Our engineer is Liam Werner. And the show is produced by Hannah Forden and Caroline Hatchett. Shift Work is produced in collaboration with Heritage Radio Network, America's pioneer food podcast network. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.